This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Adrian Brody, won this year's Academy Award for Best Actor for his performance in The Pianist. It was based on the true story of Władysław Szpilman, a Jewish pianist in Warsaw who survived the Holocaust by hiding from the Nazis. Brody has also been featured in Spike Lee's film Summer of Sam, Barry Levinson's Liberty Heights, Ken Loach's Bread and Roses, and starred in the independent film Restaurant. Now he's starring in the independent film Dummy, which was actually shot before The Pianist. He plays a young man who's unemployed, still living with his parents and sister in the suburbs. His fantasy is to become a ventriloquist, so even though his family mocks him, he buys a dummy and starts teaching himself how to throw his voice. He expresses himself more freely through his dummy than he can on his own. Here's a scene in which he's talking with his dummy. The dummy has been criticizing him for being a loser and for not having any friends.
I guess I didn't really have that many friends in high school. I didn't really have any. What about Thangora? Yeah, I guess we were friends. You know, she didn't have many friends either. Go figure. Kind of stayed close, even when I went off to college. You went to college? Yeah. Went to community college for 2 years. Ooh, a regular Einstein. Damn, I stopped going because I didn't really like it. You failed out of community college. You are a moron. Well, I didn't fail. I just needed to work at my own speed. Oh, so you're slow. No. Look, the thing I don't understand is, you always knew you wanted to be a ventriloquist. Why'd you wait so long to do it? Well, I just think people need to go at their own pace, and there were other things that I had to do. Well, I got news for you, Dunny. You're almost 30 years old. You quit your job to die a doll. You failed out of community college. And you live at home with your parents. You are a loser.
I asked Adrian Brody how he learned ventriloquism for the film.
Well, I think, you know, when you're doing independent movies and most movies, you rarely have enough time to prepare. And I was coming off another film and going right into another one right after this, and I had about 2 weeks to learn how to become a ventriloquist. Fortunately, the character was a mediocre ventriloquist. And so I was perfect. and so I basically lived with this dummy and slept with the dummy, which...
You slept with the dummy?
Everyone thought I was a little strange.
Why did you need to sleep with the dummy?
Well, it had to become a part of me, in a sense. It had to become someone I was very comfortable with. And I basically took him with me and incorporated him in my daily activities and would watch programs on TV. I remember researching it and watching all this old footage of ventriloquists and Edgar Bergman, and I would be watching programs and commenting on their routine and discussing it with my dummy. And you know, my mom would come over and visit, and I'd be laying in bed with a wooden creature.
So, and
a little wooden boy.
Wait till the tabloids hear about
strange,
this.
Yes, I'm sure they'll have a field day.
So you had to develop a voice for your dummy.
Right.
Who taught you how to do it?
Well, I worked with a coach who is an actual ventriloquist who built the dummy. We had one custom built for me. And they have ventriloquist tapes that you can actually purchase and work at home, and you basically practice the alphabet, and certain letters are harder to pronounce than others, and you just kind of, it's all about practice.
So what letters are hard to pronounce with your lips closed?
B's, as in boy, because you, certain, oh, and W's, because I was going to say certain words,
got it,
are harder, you know. Basically anything that you'd have to actually touch your lips to create that sound are impossible. So you end up having to do that with your tongue way back in your palate, and so you're creating a whole different way of speaking. That's actually you're creating the illusion that you're saying be, but you're saying the, which I actually did without moving my mouth. And
is this ever going to come in handy again?
I don't think, I doubt it. it was interesting. You know, I the wonderful thing about acting is that you experience all these things that you would never come across in real life, and that may have a purpose at some point or may not. I mean, I used to be fascinated with magic as a young man and as a boy, and they kind of, you kind of came across ventriloquists in the magic on the road, so to speak.
Now, you used to perform magic as a kid. I think you used to call yourself the Amazing Adrian. Yes,
that's correct.
was there supposed to be any irony in that title?
Yes, absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
What was your act like?
Obviously,
when you were 12?
I was 11 or 12. And, yeah. You know, I would do children's parties. I mean, first of all, I had a fascination with magic. I think partially because you could pull the wool over adults. And, you know, I think it was my introduction to acting, in a sense, because it, when you purchase an actual magic trick, they give you a basic outline of a pattern, and that's your routine. And then it's up to you to embellish upon that. And what I did was I would learn a trick and then run with it and create its whole story to go with it. And that's what it's about.
I didn't realize that when you buy a magic trick, they give you patter with it.
They'll give you an outline. You know, they'll say, you know, I was at a bar the other day and came across this guy, and he handed me this coin, and he asked me so-and-so and this and this. And as an 11-year-old kid, you couldn't say I was at a bar the other day. So you'd say I was online at the lunchroom, and I found this quarter on the floor, and I realized that if I focused hard enough, that I could actually, by using my powers, I could bend, you know, whatever it was, and that's how it goes. And my favorite trick I used to do was breaking a pencil with a dollar bill, because as long as there was a pencil in the room and a dollar bill, I could do a magic trick, and it was fun.
Adrian Brody is my guest. He's starring in the new movie Dummy. He won the Best Actor Oscar for his performance in The Pianist. How did Roman Polanski choose you for The Pianist? Was he familiar with your work?
I'm not sure how familiar he was. He knew of my work, but his casting director thought that I would be a good person to meet, and I was actually in Paris shooting Affair of the Necklace, and we sat down for coffee, and the only information that I had was that Roman was going to be doing this new film about a pianist who survives in Nazi-occupied Poland. And we sat down and we spoke and had a lovely time, and we met again, and he got a script to me, and we discussed it. And it was an incredibly challenging role, and even on the page it was challenging, but impossible to understand what an ordeal it would be to
I have trouble watching Holocaust movies, because you know what the characters are in for, and you know how horrible it's going to be, and you know, in some ways you want to protect yourself from even living through it as a viewer watching a movie.
Right.
So even living through it as an actor, you know, must be pretty rough.
Well, there was a huge responsibility, I felt, because how does a young man from Queens who has not really experienced hunger on that level, mm-hmm. has not suffered on a real level like that, truthfully portray these things and these emotions? And There are so many people who have experienced this firsthand, and whose families have, you know, whose lives have been permanently changed by these events, and it was also such a personal story for Roman, who had lived through these experiences himself.
How did you answer that question that you just posed? You know, how does, like, a young man from Queens who's never experienced anything close to that level of suffering, how do you convey in an honest way that experience?
Well, Roman helped me suffer. that was one thing. But I basically, before I left to do the movie, when I started the film, I understood that I had to experience a few key things and understand them well. One is loss, mm-hmm. and loss of comfort, and loss of safety, and hunger. And so before I left, I gave up my apartment. I had a place in New York. Gave up my apartment, put whatever I had in storage, sold a bunch of things, sold my car, disconnected my phones, got rid of my cell phone. And I left. And I went to Europe for about 7 months with a few bags and my own keyboard. And when I got there, I had to do a crash diet because we shot in reverse chronology, and I had to lose a lot of weight because there was a physical transformation that was necessary, which also gave me a greater connection, not only to the understanding hunger, which made me understand the sense of emptiness and loss that I wouldn't have known, but I was practicing piano for 4 hours a day at that time, and interestingly enough, the piano playing was a perfect distraction from the hunger, which allowed me to identify with the music in a way that I hadn't never really grasped before. And I should also say that Roman, when I say that, you know, Roman made it tough, he did make it tough in a sense, but he toughened me up in a way, because he wouldn't tolerate any kind of what he would call as Hollywood actor behavior, which would, you know, essentially be asking for something like a piece of bread. That was intolerable. But he reminded me, you know, of what is important, and I admire him tremendously.
How much weight did you lose? I mean, you were already pretty thin by anybody's standards.
I lost 30 pounds. I'm 6'1". I went to 130.
Wow, okay. So that's a lot. Did you ever ask yourself when you were making the movie, like, am I ruining my body? Am I breaking my body? Am I doing, like, irreparable harm for a role?
Yeah, it frightened me afterwards. It kind of became... I have a really strong willpower, and it's something that I am proud of. And it was kind of like an experiment that I was having with myself to see how thin I could get, which was the plan. It wasn't like, okay, 130 is a safe weight. It was like I really couldn't get below that. And, you know, it may have fluctuated below that or above that here and there, but I pretty much stayed at that weight for the time that I needed to stay there, and then I would gradually increase it because we would have to slowly shoot in reverse chronology, and it would slowly get thinner, so I would slowly gain weight, and then I had to gain a lot of weight at towards the end, and that was, yeah, it had an effect on me. But
what's the point of shooting in reverse chronology, of shooting the end of the movie first? It seems counterintuitive, especially for a movie like this, where you're experiencing a constantly diminished life and you're in constant growing danger.
It basically comes down to what works for the production. You know, anytime I've done a film, it's usually your most difficult scenes come first. Your love scene comes first. Your death scene comes first.
Would you ever come out the other end and think, if I had only gone through this in chronological order, I would have played that ultimate scene differently?
Well, but the advantage in this film, I mean, part of the reason was they had to have seasons, and the war was at the bleakest moment was at winter, and we shot at winter time.
Mm-hmm.
And then spring in Poland is actually beautiful and becomes very green and lush. And that took place prior to the war to give it this kind of more serene, happier environment. The advantage of shooting in reverse chronology was that I understood this man in a way that I wouldn't have understood playing a man who was extremely talented and lived a very normal, kind of happy, yet it wasn't very specific, his existence prior to that. You don't know what defines this human being. You don't know what he's capable of. And the challenge came later in trying to let go of all the kind of pain that I absorbed and tried to absorb and create a sense of lightness and stubbornness and hope of humanity. But I think it was completely advantageous to me to shoot in reverse chronology, in hindsight.
Adrian Brody is my guest, and he's starring in the new movie, Dummy. He starred in The Pianist and won an Academy Award this year for that performance. Your mother is Sylvia Plahy, a photojournalist who has worked for years for The Village Voice. Did you ever go on assignment with her? Did you get introduced to people and places and ways of living that you never would have gotten to see firsthand if it wasn't for the fact that she was on assignment?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I basically, not only was I introduced to wonderfully interesting people, but also getting an understanding of things through her perspective, which is wonderful, and you know, the beauty of photography is, as an art form, is that you're capturing so much beyond the actual image, and you're conveying so much. And she has a wonderful eye, and I think I've inherited a bit of that, partially through osmosis, and. It's also probably made me a better actor because she notices everything, and we would discuss what she noticed and what she saw in this thing. Because when she's taking pictures, she'd say, "Oh, look at this! Look at those birds, and look at what they look like. Don't they look like a face coming off this? You know, and the way the sun is reflecting in the water. Doesn't this image look wonderfully like some old European world?" And it was almost like a story. I often describe my process as a very similar process, except I don't like to lug cameras around and spend my time in a dark room. She sees and witnesses everything and captures it on film, and I see and witness everything and try to absorb it and recall it later and incorporate it in characters that I portray in the future.
Did your mother take a lot of pictures of you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I have an infinite amount of photographs of me from childhood on.
Did that make you any more or less self-conscious about how do I look?
Far less self-conscious, I think, because the other advantage was that she didn't ever want me to pose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another advantage that I have is that I grew up in front of a camera in a very nurturing environment. And my mother was ever present with a lens on me, either in my face or with me and with my friends. And it became second nature to me. And so I wasn't encouraged to ham it up. I wasn't encouraged to pose. And so I just lived with the presence of a camera in a very safe place. And so, you know, there'd be a camera while I was taking a bath. There'd be a camera while I was blowing my nose. There'd be a camera when I was sleeping and a mess. And those pictures ended up in her books and in magazines. And so it kind of took the pressure away of worrying about being beautiful all the time, because it wasn't really... I didn't feel like that was what was expected of me.
Right, right. Compared to, like, the people who just get photographed for the occasion, where you have to, like, look your best and look really happy because this is the memory that will be preserved and you want to preserve it.
Or it being an awkward moment every time your parents pull out the camera and they're like, smile. Why aren't you smiling? Please.
Yeah.
You know, this is a happy moment. We need you to be smiling here. I mean, come on. It's going to be a bad memory. And how can you ever be relaxed? And then you want to follow your dreams of being an actor.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Adrien Brody stars in the new movie, Dummy.